The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Now offering 5 years free servicing on every new 142 Hyundai, Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, there were certain changes in the budget last year that meant people began to believe that maybe they could do something like extend their homes. Some people building them, but say to extend your home. And Dermot Bannon, who you all know very well from the television, he's an architect and he's the presenter on Room to Improve, has written this book, which he calls Love Your Home, Secrets to a Successful Space. And he's with me in studio here this morning. What would you put top of the list for people to think about? Say initially for extensions.
Light. If you had to put anything in the top of the list, light is the one thing that transforms a home. And then I suppose it's functionality. And then it's a connection to the outside, some kind of a connection to what you have around your home, be it landscape, be it a courtyard, be it a tree, be it a church spire, just to look around you. So they're the three fundamental things.
Yeah. And you say that some people have lost all the connection to light, and that maybe the way houses are arranged traditionally mightn't be the best way for your house to be arranged at all. You know, that you've kind of the what used to be called the sitting room, the dining room, the front and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and I think I was throughout the book, I was researching and trying to examine why have we done things. So I suppose, look, there's an incredible disconnect, I think, now with the land. And that has then given us, and to start from the beginning, I think 100 years ago, we built beautiful farmhouses. We built lovely cottages. And if you drive through any old Irish village and you see the collection of the settlements of buildings up on the hill or the farmhouses, they work incredibly well. Farmers built them. There was no architects involved. But they understood where shelter was. They understood where the light was, where the wind. They understood everything. And then they built their houses around that. And I think in the last 40 years, there's books, there's generic books with house designs, you know, books like Bungalow Bliss and things like that. And I think what that did is that set up a disconnect with the land, because people were able to just buy a house type or a house plan from a book, go to page 244, yeah, and you plonked that onto the site, into the middle of the site, without really understanding where you were building or what you were building.
It was a question of cost.
It was. And I suppose I've questioned that in the book, and there was a reason behind it. But I think what it did was it severed our connection as a people with the landscape, and then severed our connection with architecture, and severed it. Just it stopped people thinking about things, because you bought the plan and most people just didn't deviate from it, and then it became the norm.
And then the hall door faced the road.
The hall door faced the road, and you had your good sitting room to the front of the house. You had your kitchen to the back of the house, regardless what it looked over or where the light was. Most of us spend 90% of our time in the kitchen. And like, even things like when I was examining, kind of going back through the house design for the book, the good room at the front, there was a good purpose for it. It was, you know, 60-70 years ago, you didn't have the money to do up the whole house for visitors, so you had one room, and that was where the parish priest went.
That's where he went, yeah.
And or if you had a formal visitor, because people didn't go out to restaurants, they didn't meet their friends. As if you had somebody formally coming, you needed one room that could at least show that you were a half decent person, and you could bring them in the front door, and then into the left or into the right was your good room, and that's and then the children could be climbing the wall in the back of the house, the whole place could be falling to shambles, but nobody knew that you were giving out the right impression.
Yeah.
But we've moved on since that. We've, you know, now people come in the back door, and most people, there's no such thing as a formal visitor to the house anymore. And most people come in through the back door, normally through the utility room, where everybody's washing, is drying, is hanging out for everybody to see, and they're into the kitchen. And when I was doing the research for the book, everything that I've kind of learned and kind of thought in my own head over the last 8 years about house design, I had to kind of back it up, and I had to go and make sure that what I was thinking is correct. So people like being in the kitchen because it's a slow space, because it's normally where somebody's cooking or somebody's standing up. So it's an informal place, and that's where a lot of informal conversations happen, and people feel more relaxed. And that's why we're drawn to the kitchen. But we still now, everybody comes in the back door, they drive around the back door. That again brought its own problems, because it meant it severed any connection from the kitchen to this, because you're looking out at a car, because the car is parked up outside the back door, and then that blocks the view. So the book opened up a huge can of worms into house design for me. And,
right.
And where have we gone wrong? And it all started off with just this: buying a plan, and that's the only plan, never changing it, and then plonking it onto the site. So you were completely severed from your own needs and the needs of the site around you.
Right. Very fair point. But you don't have to keep the rooms, you point out, in the same usage all of the time.
No.
And that light, you know, sunrises in the east, yes. And the consequences for that, and what happens with southern light and what happens with western light. And indeed what happens with northern light.
Yeah, so sunrise in the east, so you put your bedrooms to the east, you put your daytime living spaces to the south. And that's kind of, even if it does face the road, you know, that's, I suppose, what architects do. You design your way out of it. If you've got incredible sunlight to the front of your house, but the back garden faces north, if you're designing a house from scratch, you design it, you follow the sun.
And but even if you have an existing house that is very dark at the back, can you not reverse all that?
You can flip it, yeah. And sometimes lots of people can't see the woods for the trees, because the living room might have been at the front of the house for 40 years, the kitchen was at the back, and that's a massive shift for them to look, I think you need to move your living spaces to the front of the house, and they just can't get over that. So sometimes they do need somebody to come in and tell them, and this is what you need to do. And if you don't do it, you're not going to solve any of the problems. You can paint the back of the house every different version of yellow until kingdom come, but it's not going to change how the house functions or performs.
Right. You say start off with light.
Yeah.
Look at your orientation as you've talked there. Consider things going. Now, when it comes to, you've the heart, the head and the gut. What's
the head,
that
the heart
about?
And the gut. Yeah. That was a guy I worked for years ago. I was on my year out in college, and I really wanted to work for this guy. Ross Cahill O'Brien was his name. He was based in Dunleary, and that was his theory. Every home, every building needs a head, a heart and a gut. And what the building that he was designing at the time was the Kitchen Nightclub in the bottom of the Clarence Hotel, and it was based on the gut. It was the workings of the thing. So yeah, you need a headspace in a house, so that's somewhere to go and think, somewhere to be alone. That's maybe a den or a library. You need a heart,
or a bedroom
or just anywhere and away from it all space. You need a heart of a home, and that's your kitchen. That's the centre of everything. That's where life and soul of the house happen. And then you need a gut. So the gut is utility rooms, storage rooms, anywhere. And if you don't have the right proportion of these, your house won't work.
Yeah, how much percentage do you believe should be for storage?
10. At least 10%. But if you go to Europe, if you go to even a small apartment in Stockholm or somewhere like that, they'll have a bike store downstairs, they'll have a bin store. You'll go up into the apartment, there'll be a little storage room. The amount of people I know who go away a lot, who work away, and they still climb up the attic, up a ladder to get their weekend bag down. You know, every house needs storage. And I think
Buggies and
scooters and rollerblades and bikes. And I'm the worst offender. Our own house has got everything crammed into the hall. I'd love more storage in our house. But, you know, these are the things you learn along the way. But I would, at least every house should have 10% storage.
That's a very interesting one. I think of the apartments that were built during the boom times here. Anyway, you also say to identify your own needs and design for your own life, but you advocate communal open plan living, which to some people sounds like an absolute nightmare because they've nowhere to hide rubbish or store things.
That's where the gut comes in. You see, if you've created the perfect heart, if you don't have the gut, you're failed. You know, so if you don't, like, but it is true. Like, I've been into many big kind of open plan spaces and people are incredibly proud of it. But there's a clothes horse sitting in the corner. There's the buggy sitting in the room.
Yeah.
You know, you do need somewhere to put the stuff of life, and we all have all of that. So, I am an advocate for the communal kind of living, and I think that's the way we live now. I think most people go into the kitchen, and I've seen couches crammed in beside an Aga cooker. I've seen, you know, so we want to spend time in those rooms. We want to spend time together as a family. Life has changed as well. When I grew up, my mum was forced to give up work. That was the law at the time.
Yeah.
So she was at home with us all day long. And so she was with us for quite a big percentage of the day. But then there's times when she'd go outside and play, go to such and such.
Yeah.
Now we're all coming in at 5 o'clock in the evening, 6 o'clock in the evening, 7 o'clock. We don't spend as much time together as a family. So I think it's more important that people want to spend more time together as a family. And things like when we were growing up, you were told, get out now. You know, if there's a visitor coming.
Yeah.
It's not. Now, we children and all that are much more part of life.
So you would say, consider knocking down a wall here or there.
Yeah. Well, it's like even... doing the research for the book again, our standard 3-bed semi or a 4-bed semi is still based on a Victorian layout. So you walk into a house and you've got the good room to the left or to the right hand side, and then you've got the good dining room or the middle room, and then you've got the kitchen at the back. this good dining room, this good middle room that is in practically every three-bed semi is normally where the treadmill goes, or again, where the clothes horse goes, or the spot, the bike, or the Christmas decorations, and it becomes a waste of a room. Whereas if that was knocked through to the kitchen, and then you can get a lovely flow between the two rooms. But we're still build our developer houses are still being built on the Victorian pattern, which had the good room to the front, and then everything else could be right. in shambles.
And you say also, I mean, if for there are different ways, I suppose, about light. And you say consider putting in a huge window that brings the garden in. But if you've a corridor down the middle of your house, which quite a lot of those bungalows yeah. do. How do you get light into them?
Well, normally whatever is at the end of the corridor. So I've done maybe four or five of these bungalows where we've renovated old 1970s bungalows. And there's normally an ensuite at the very end of the corridor in behind one of the rooms, and just take it out and open it up and put a window at the end of it, put a little window seat. That's the most dramatic, I think, solution to it. If not, like, not every room on the corridor might be a bedroom. So you might have a study or you might have a library. Mm. Maybe you might consider taking out part of that wall and putting in a glazed screen. You still need sound insulation. But at least then when you're walking down the corridor, there's light, but there's also a view beyond and you can see into it. And, you know, if you really can't do that, I introduce a roof light. But I think if you can start off by getting a view and a window seat or some kind of a window into the corridor, that's number one. Secondly, borrow a view and borrow light from another room by introducing a glaze. And then finally, roof light.
Bathrooms. You yes. believe there should be relaxing spaces. You believe in your bathrooms. I remember saying once that I hadn't had a bath for years. Looking at me a little bit oddly, you know. And now with water charges, but it's usually speed. You believe spend the money.
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
You went behind your own wife's back.
Yes, I remember. I don't know if anybody knows. There was an architect years ago called Arne Jacobsen,
yep.
and I bought it's a Vola tap. Vola make these, and they're beautiful. They're design classics, and I really wanted one for our house. And Louise, my wife, did the spreadsheet, so I was designing the house and I was picking.
And
everything.
She was minding the budget.
She was minding the budget
just as well. I would
yes.
have thought.
Oh yeah,
yes.
Like I was. Yeah. I had my wings clipped a lot, but at one point, I said, "Look, I really want this tap." And she was there, no. And I was there, oh, no, you don't really understand how much I want this to happen. She says, no. And I said, okay. So she, look, I don't want you to. So she went off. I went out and I bought the tap and I hid the tap under the bed. And we were staying with her parents at the time and I had to hide it right deep in under the bed. So the tap stayed there. And it was only when the plumber was fitting it, I whipped it out from under the bed, put it onto the thing. And she never really knew. I didn't explain to her for about a year after. That's the actual tap that was. I hid it. I paid for it on the credit card.
How much did you pay for it?
I think it was about €800 at the time.
800?
I know.
For a tap?
I know. But it's coming with me. That's coming. I'm going to be buried with it. That's coming with me everywhere. I love it. But every time I go up to the bathroom, come on, how much would a decent handbag cost? If you went in to buy a handbag, if you spent €800 on a handbag, would anybody guffaw?
They most certainly would.
Well, I've seen people buy handbags for far more than that and you don't use it as much as a tap.
I wouldn't spend €800. I'd pay a trip to the psychiatrist.
That was my thing at the time. I was buying a design classic, but there's at the time there wasn't. Now you can get stuff that is equally well designed for. So I wouldn't advocate. That was just my little thing. And that,
right.
when I'm leaving that house, that tap is coming with me to the next house, and that tap will go with me. So that was my one splurge.
Right, and it'll go in with you to the coffin, I presume.
Damn well.
Right, okay. And you do firmly believe in baths.
Yes, I think it's a ritual that we've come away from, and yeah. That I think if you look at kind of Eastern societies and kind of you go to India, you go to all of these countries, like the bath is hugely important, and you know even in Finland they treat the sauna and
yeah.
the ritual, and
yeah.
it's a family get together. I think a bathroom should be a relaxing space, and I think we've kind of had a race to the bottom where they're just getting tighter and tighter and smaller, it's becoming more and more utilitarian. But there's something about being in water. And I haven't had a bath for years neither. It's a shower every morning. I'm having a shower every morning.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there is something about, like water and fire and air, like they're, you know, we all love sitting around a fire.
Yep.
We all love sitting around an open fire. And I think a fire is incredibly important in a house. We all love water, but we don't use it. And
right.
it's something that they're...
Okay, can I interrupt you there for a moment? Because we have to go to the Angelus and we have to go to the newsroom, but we'll be back and I know that there will be further questions for you. So Dermot Bannon will be staying with us over the next couple of minutes to take any of your calls or queries. But in the meantime, we will pause for the Angelus. And thank you very much indeed. Now, back with Dermot Bannon here. And I should say, Dermot was saying to me there in the break that all the photos in this, these are all Irish houses.
They're all Irish houses, and they're my contemporaries. They're my kind of, a lot of them are my architectural heroes in Ireland. I think there's a wealth of good young Irish architects in this country, and they've been designing houses and house extensions for the last 10 years, and I've tried to include as many of them in the book as possible. Right. But there's no, all, every photograph in the book is of an Irish house.
Okay.
And it's something.
It's not that, California.
No, and I
it's
think,
not
you know,
Scandinavia.
And the amount of houses I go into, and you're talking to people, and they have these stacks of books and stacks of magazines in the corner. And they are, they're California, they're Australia, they're somewhere where the climate is incredibly warm. And so you don't have the same drafts, the wind, rain that we have. So I, it was really important for me that people, when they're flicking through it and they're looking at just the pictures, would, you know, that every image is something that they could do in their own home because the materials will fit in an Irish climate.
Okay. I never fully thought about light. This is a caller. I never fully thought about light in the house until I lived in a house with a north-facing kitchen at the back. Pure hell. Now in a tiny, much-loved, light-filled house, it actually affected my mood every single day without realising it's so important, and I presume you'd agree with that.
100%.
Dermot, is Ireland not too cold for open plan, like too hard to heat?
No, like with the way we're designing houses now, it's they're almost passive, you know, and that's actually a building regulation.
Insulated.
And you just, you're creating a space. They don't have to be huge cavernous houses. We went through a stage in the boom where nothing was anything unless it was 5,000 square foot.
Yeah,
I don't believe in that. I don't think a house needs to be that size. It just needs to function. It needs to be big enough for you and your needs. And make your spaces flexible. We don't need 100 spare bedrooms. We don't need all of these rooms. Make it flexible. But no, I think if a house is well insulated, windows are great now. There's a, if you are getting windows in your house, there's a little thing called the U value. And just to be aware of that, the lower the number on that, the better they are. Like some of these windows are fantastic. They're nearly as good as a block wall for insulation.
Yeah, you say a third of the budget should be set aside for windows.
Yes. Yeah, and good windows, because I think we've, you know, you can get cheap windows in, and I'm not a huge fan of PVC, but, you know, when budget prevails and there's some good PVC windows out there, there's some passive standard ones, but, you know, it's the materials. I think if you can spend money, these are the kind of the windows, they're the eyes to the house, and I think they frame views, they do so much. A window does an incredible amount in a house, and I don't think we've ever kind of thought of windows for doing that. And in the 70s, the sills got higher and higher and higher, and then you're sitting in a kitchen and you can't out because you got the splashback. You got the, you know, back in the 70s, I always laugh at this, that people think that you had to put the sink up against the window because it was a building regulation, you know, but it's not. And so people spend so much time looking out at the sky or at the tops of trees, and it's
through the fairy.
Yeah,
squeegee or
the
whatever,
liquid and, yeah, and the neck curtains. But you know, if you look at the old Georgian and Victorian houses, their sills were very low.
So
you could pull up in your armchair, and you know they were 450 off the ground, and you could look out onto the street or onto the view or whatever it is. So I don't think our climate is perfectly suited. And if a house is designed right, like one thing that glass does, it gives you solar gain. So if you design it right, and maybe put a little bit of shading for when it's very hot in the summer, so an overhang.
Never too hot, and
but you can put it. You get a solar gain. You get the light coming through glass will heat the room.
Right. Okay. I have a kitchen diner and I just hate the diner end. I know it's the lights, but I don't know how to make it cozier or nicer. I've spotlights in the kitchen area, but one downlighter in the diner area. It's lamps I need or more downlights. I often hear lighting can change an area, but I haven't a clue where to begin.
Do you know what the easiest thing, and I often tell this to people, go into a really fancy restaurant. Now, you don't even have to buy a meal there. Just go in. But if you look at big open restaurants where you might have 40 or 50 tables, but they're really intimate just at the space that you're sitting. And look at how they use lighting. It is lamps, and it's don't use downlighters. I'm not a big fan of downlighters in living rooms or dining spaces because they throw an awful light onto you. And very rarely, now if you're going to use LEDs, you can't dim them. But use soft, subtle lighting. And do you remember back in the 70s, it was the big trend for putting the big pendant over the table and you dropped it down with the curly kind of cable. They're brilliant because what it does is it creates a lovely, intimate dining space. But lamps, and if you can open up a window even if you want to get natural light in during the day, maybe to widen out a thing. But go. The best trick for making a space intimate is go into a space that shouldn't be intimate, and that's a big dining room in a big restaurant, and right. See how they make
the table. Very good idea. That's a very good idea. Now, the book is called Love Your Home, Secrets to a Successful Space. It's written by Dermot Bannon, and as I say, it's very well illustrated throughout to give you a sense of the points that he's making. And I know that a lot of people are considering, well, they're probably considering insulation, and maybe they might do other work as well along the way. Listen, I wish you well with that, Dermot, and thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much, Marion.
Okay, thanks.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.